Cambridge Ideas, transforming tomorrow.
King Henry VIII cuts a grotesque figure in the public imagination with his track record of beheading wives and indulging in impressive feats of gluttony. But there was a softer side to the king. He had a deep love of music, and he was a talented composer. David Skinner is the director of music at Sydney Sussex College and leads the early music group Alamire. To mark the 500th anniversary of Henry's coronation, Alamire is making a world premiere recording of songs from the king's personal choir book, as well as a selection composed by Henry himself. The recording accompanies a major exhibition at the British Library, opened by Alamire with a live performance in the library courtyard. Reporter Fred Dove joined David Skinner and Alamire in rehearsal on the day of their performance.
Today is the 500th anniversary of the coronation of Henry VIII, and we are performing a coronation concert. It gives us a chance to sing music written for Henry and music written by Henry, and we're standing in front of it right now, a beautiful illuminated choir book that was given to Henry VIII and Catherine of Aragon in 1516. It actually starts out with quite an epic poem celebrating Henry VIII and his new reign. And you turn the page and you get a double opening, two Tudor roses, each surrounded by musical notation. And what you actually get is a canon of the fourth. So you see two parts, but in fact there are four parts of music. It's a glory to hear. It's rarely been performed and certainly never been recorded. And then as the choir book carries on, it's music really to get the royal juices flowing. They're trying to conceive an heir at that time, 1516. So it's all about childbirth, about lovemaking. And indeed, some of the most beautiful pieces, I think, of that repertory in that period are contained in this choir book.
Gave this choir book to Henry?
We don't really know. It probably came from the workshop of Petrus Alamire, is where we get our name, our choir's name. And he was a very famous scribe in the early 16th century who was also a spy at the Tudor court. And he seems the most likely candidate. I mean, some scholars argue that point, but he was certainly around in England in 1516. And I can't think of anybody with the skill that he had that could have produced such a beautiful production as this.
Now, Henry himself was very musical. He composed music himself?
Composed music. Also in the British Library, there's a collection called the Henry VIII Manuscript that contains 109 compositions. And of those 109, 33 are attributed to the king. And it shows a very different character of Henry, not the tyrant, but the young prince, the virtuous prince, the lover, the hunter. And the songs are full of animation, of war, of lovemaking, of the chase.
So it completely overturns what we now think of as this fat, old, lecherous king.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the truth of the matter is, from 1536, his life begins to tear apart. I mean, he loses Catherine of Aragon. She dies of natural causes, probably a heartbreak, we think. Anne Boleyn gets her head chopped off, and then a good 6 to 9 months later, he loses his one queen that he claims to wish to stand by for the rest of his life, Jane Seymour, shortly after she gave birth to Edward VI. And he also fell off his horse, so he couldn't exercise anymore. He broke his leg, so he became fat, grotesque, ill-tempered. So, yeah, 1536 was very much a turning point for him.
My name's Claire Wilkinson. I'm a mezzo-soprano. I've been in Alamire for about 4 years now, not since the very beginning, but almost from the beginning of the group's existence. And I studied classics at Cambridge from 1995 to 1998, where I had a choral scholarship at Trinity College and stayed on for an extra year until 1999, just doing the singing. I chose to go and study at Trinity because they had that choir of a very high standard and used that particular sort of early music, clean, pure sound that I had already fallen in love with. quite simple music. It's similarly demanding to other sorts of Renaissance music, I would say. But it has a certain simplicity that I find very appealing. The lines are very simple, except in perhaps the Fairfax, where there's an unusual sort of rhythmic complication. But always there's this, particularly in the solo songs which I'm doing, there's a very sort of heartfelt simplicity, either talking about love or talking about the pastimes of youth. And the young king obviously was very preoccupied with both those topics, and you can feel that the music comes from the heart.
Under Henry, there were huge changes politically, religiously, and so on. But musically, what was his legacy?
His legacy really was actually kick-starting the Reformation. The Reformation didn't really get going in full thrust in his reign. I mean, the country remained Catholic, so the music didn't change very much. So as soon as Henry dies, the Reformation goes from being political to doctrinal. So under Edward VI, all the music becomes English, becomes very pithy for every syllable and note. So the Protestants, in the end, get their way. So without Henry's kick-starting of that Reformation, you wouldn't have some of the most wonderful composers of the later 16th century, Thomas Tallis and William Byrd, who very much grew up in this change. And they learnt, basically, how to set a text and how to set it romantically and with passion.
The songs in this choir book and from this era, so 500 years ago, what are the characteristics?
Well, all church music is something that you use for meditation. And music at that time served no other purpose than, say, a stained glass window or a beautiful tapestry or a beautiful image upon which you can worship. It aided prayer. And this music really does wash over you like an oral tapestry. And it's meant to facilitate prayer. And that's the religious stuff. But the secular stuff that we also perform is very much for courtly entertainment. And, you know, usually has some themes of religion, but more than usual of love and hunting.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We are the Alamiri Consort, Noble Consort, and we're joined by Andrew Lawrence King on the Gothic Choir.
When you sing music from this particular period, do you find yourself imagining the period, being in that period?
Yes, very much so. There's something of the atmosphere of that time that the music very strongly evokes. And of course, for us, I'm not a historian, I'm not an academic, I don't have so many of the details in my brain like David does. But for me, I just can imagine the flavour of the times, particularly the acoustic of the buildings, the churches where they would have performed it, and perhaps the more rustic nature of the voices they would have used then. There's one particular song where the person singing sings the words, "I will be yours until I die." And of course, looking back, we know that that's not how it turned out at all. But it's interesting to see that Henry felt strongly enough about that to use these words to put his feelings into music.
From a connoisseur's point of view, is this music actually any good?
Oh, fantastic, yeah. And there's so much of it. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we've barely scratched the surface. I mean, the English Reformation hit music quite hard, actually. So, I mean, there would have been probably thousands of choir books that circulated just before Henry died. And we now just have a handful. But within that handful, there's still so much yet to explore. And there's still so much that's actually coming from posthumous sources, later 16th century sources that have been stitched together. And we're reclaiming the early Tudor dynasty more and more with pieces actually being extracted from later sources. And it's not just England. I mean, then you can move over to France, to Italy, Spain, Portugal. I mean, there's just so much of this wonderful music written between around 1480 and 1560. And it really is the flowering of church music and chamber music.
for you personally? Is this an era of music that you find that draws you? Is it particular to you?
I mean, I always feel my students are often very much into Wagner and, you know, 19th century, early 20th century stuff, and they're horrified when I say, well, I mean, it all seems to go downhill after 1600, but I mean, there is so much more to explore, and it has so many different moods and feelings, you know, that can be drawn out of this music.
You compare this music to a stained glass window, something that you're just meant to appreciate and contemplate to and relax to. Mm. Is it still, though, 500 years on, is it still relevant? Can it still appeal to people today?
Yeah, because it's spiritual, and regardless of you know, what your religious beliefs are, I can guarantee you, you buy the Henry's music record and you put it on, pour yourself a nice glass of claret, turn the lights off, light a candle, and regardless of your spiritual religious beliefs, you will be moved.
Early music group Alamiri and David Skinner, director of music at Sydney Sussex College at the University of Cambridge, ending that report from Fred Dove. You've been listening to a podcast from the University of Cambridge.